Life Audio.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations.
We want families to come here and gain insightful strategies that empower them to successfully teach diverse learners at home.
Hosted by founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool, Peggy Ployer.
Our goal is that these powerful weekly conversations will boost your confidence to cultivate the best at-home learning environment for your student.
For more homeschool resources, go to spedhomeschool.com. You're listening to Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer. We'll start the conversation with Peggy and her guests next.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool, a nonprofit that empowers families to home educate diverse learners. To learn more, visit spedhomeschool.com. Here's Peggy Ployer.
So today we are going to learn how to conquer homeschool obstacles. And today my guest is Jenny Swan. Welcome, Jenny, and welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Peggy. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. I know we've been focusing on a variety of different issues this month. Usually we stick to a certain topic. And so last week we had talked about homeschooling a child who's hard of hearing. And Jenny has a child who is deaf. And so she's going to be focusing a little bit on that too. So kind of a little bit in that same theme. But we wanted to focus on kind of a bigger topic too. And Jenny has just so much experience and wisdom to share with you. So you're definitely going to want to hold on. Even if you don't have a child who has a hearing issue, she's got a lot of information to share with you and to encourage you. This hour, we just want to encourage you, especially this season when winter is at its toughest and we feel like we're failing in our homeschooling. I know a lot of us question that around this February time because we can't see the progress, you know, so closely. And we just feel like, am I really making a difference? And so we want to encourage you in that. If you're in that place, stick around. You definitely want to hear this conversation. So Jenny, you're a military wife.
Yep.
And you have how many kids?
I've got five.
Five kids, and you homeschool. And Jenny was sharing with me, she has kids with other learning issues as well. So can you just dive into sharing with us just how your homeschooling journey began and a little bit about your family?
Yeah, so I have a background in education. I actually have my master's in elementary education. And when I was doing my student teaching, we were at a school that had a large military population.
Yeah.
And I just saw a lot of the kids kind of struggled with that transition between duty stations. At that point, state standards were all different. So you could come from one state where you were on grade level and you could go to a different state and you were not on grade level. Either you were way above or way behind. And I just saw how it was really hard on those kids. So when we started having kids, we decided that just while my husband was active duty, we would just go ahead and homeschool and kind of give them a little more cohesive education. And that's kind of where we started.
Was
that was really the big reason, kind of that everything would kind of stay the same as opposed to changing between states. Right. And since then, my reasons have expanded exponentially because we are in our 12th year. So obviously there's a lot of growth and maturity in me, you know, in learning about schooling, but it has been incredibly helpful for my kids who do have those learning struggles, that one-on-one attention that they get at home, and having a parent who, I mean, I'm their parent, so whatever they need, I'm willing to change and do whatever's within my power to help them. So that's been really beneficial for them, I think.
That's that's just so important for that stability. And I know, especially when you have children with learning challenges, that stability becomes even more of a necessity. And so, you know, we moved a lot. And I think that homeschooling was a grounding force for our family too, that I never even really set up to do that. God prepared that ahead of me. But just the importance of knowing that we needed to have that consistency. And really now as my children are older, you know, they talk about how much we moved, but they also talked about just how much we were all together through all of those things and the adventures. I mean, Jenny and I were talking ahead of time about these adventures that we have to embrace instead of calling them obstacles or challenges. Can you talk a little bit about that and just that mind switch of how you've done that and how your family's done that?
Yeah. So we were at one point stationed overseas. And I remember that was when I kind of really switched from thinking of things as being scary and hard to choosing to think of them as adventures. And the deal was that I had to frequently drive. And my little area where I lived, none of the signs were in English anymore. And so you could easily get, if you were just slightly away from where we were, you could very easily get very lost. And so I started calling things adventures if I could get lost on them. Because it seemed less terrifying than calling them, you know, like scary things we had to do or things that made me nervous. I just would refer to them as an adventure. And I think that's really defined a lot of our schooling experience too. I know when we started out, when my youngest is my deaf child, and he's 7 now, but when he was born, we were already 5 years into homeschooling. And I remember reading all of these things that said that he really would need to be in a deaf school.
I hear that from a lot of parents in that situation.
Yeah, that he would have deaf peers, which are an important thing. But I just really wondered if I would be able to provide all of the things that he needed. And I remember feeling so incredibly overwhelmed, like I was not going to be enough for this child or to do the things that he needed.
Right.
And I remember we were really fortunate that we had some great professionals that we worked with. And I have a really supportive husband, too, who encouraged me that I didn't have to do it all in one day to start with.
Right. We do get that mindset, though. It's like, I'm not enough now and I'll never be, you know, we kind of dig that hole right away.
Exactly. But they, I just kind of switched to, this can't be about how overwhelming it is because that's not helping either of us. Right. It has to be about an adventure. It's learning. We were talking earlier, Peggy, and I was telling you that, you know, I tell my kids frequently, like, you're not going to start out good at whatever you're doing. Like, that's not a realistic expectation. All of us have, if anything is worth doing in our lives, we have to practice it. We have to try it again and again until we can find the way that works for us to do it. You know, when you're riding a bike, you fell off again and again and again, or you know, you couldn't quite get your balance. And then all of a sudden your brain figured out how to catch that balance and you've got it. And that's just like anything else we do in our lives, including education. You just practice and you figure out what works in a particular situation. But it's so much easier when you don't go in with that expectation, you're going to start out perfect, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yes. I hate those like blog posts or, you know, this is how, you know, to organize your homeschool and, you know, get off, you know, everything will be perfect after you set it up this way. And it just, it isn't.
It's not. I can remember when my kids were really little, I had this beautiful classroom set up, you know, for my kids. They had the cute little IKEA desks and everything, their little nameplates. I was very excited. And I think we used it twice that year. Everything else was kind of on the sofa or at the kitchen table.
Right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And curriculum changed and nothing was how I thought it was going to be that first year. And right. At the beginning, I remember that being kind of a overwhelming, like frustrating thing because I expected to just know what I was, I have a background in this.
Well, you're a teacher, shouldn't you? Yes.
Exactly. But the thing is, the teaching at home is so different than teaching in a school situation. And you just have to give yourself time to learn those things that work for you and for your child as you teach.
After a word from our sponsor, we'll dive back into this conversation.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool. Go to spedhomeschool.com to get resources and support for teaching your unique learner at home.
When we most get overwhelmed is when we shorten the learning time that we need. You know, like you said, it's a process. And I always tell people, when I've homeschooled for 5 years, I'll have it all down. You know, that wasn't quite right. What I learned to say after those 5 years is, after 5 years, I now know that what I don't know, and I'm at peace with that.
Right.
So it wasn't that I knew everything, but I come to live in a peace where I could exist within what I didn't know. And that was life-changing.
Right. Like, and just understanding that you have the information you need at this moment. It's not going to be everything, but none of us are going to parent perfectly. None of us are going to educate our children perfectly. You can cover everything in every single book in your house, and your child is still not going to know everything.
Exactly.
That's just not realistic. And so, you know, it's so important to understand that all learning, our learning, their learning, it's all a process of.
Yes.
You know, you get more information and then you use that information, you know, you implement that information
in
the way that works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The way that works in your school. And then you keep going. You just, it's not a process where you learned it and then, okay, you're good. And you're all done.
Exactly.
And you have anything else to learn. You know, we're 12 years in and I feel like I'm still learning stuff so often that, you know, and I look at stuff that I know now with my youngest being in first grade versus when my oldest was in first grade and how much more I know about just how each of these kids learn and what works for them. And, there was this totally different learning system that I didn't even know about, you know,
right.
and it hasn't harmed them that I didn't know everything at the beginning. Like none of
them
are.
That's a good point.
In some dire strait, you know, because I didn't know that one thing, you know, that's not how it works. They're growing and learning too. And I think it's healthy for them to see us growing and learning also to realize it
very
is a
much
longer
true.
Process.
Yes, yes, yes. And that it isn't someday you'll have all the answers. You can be then the teacher, you know, that our kids can learn about something and turn around and try to teach it right away. That is part of the learning process. And to integrate that instead of saying, okay, you have, you know, the expert can only teach. No, it's just a person that's a step ahead of the next person that can teach.
Right.
And that gives you a lot of empowerment, you know, as a student too. And our kids learn that they can embrace that learning process instead of, you know, just being, I guess, a victim of it. Which is, I think what the schools make it a lot of times is like, you're here to learn. And then, you know, however you synthesize that outside, that's the beauty of homeschooling is we can ask them to do that right away.
Right. And I like, that's actually one of the things that we did when AJ was younger, that was so incredibly helpful. So when he was born and he was identified about 6 weeks old as having a hearing loss. And I knew he needed language, that was important to get accessible language into him. So we started signing, right? Well, I say we started signing. We started learning to sign.
Yes.
and that was his first language, but I didn't do it by myself. I would teach my kids and then I'd have them review with him, which to them felt teaching the baby. They were really using it, but it was helping them actually learn how to do it well. And then as he got his hearing aids, and he actually had pretty good access when he was young with his hearing aids to speech sounds, I would have them practice their reading with him because he needed that language. He needed, and I love literature. I feel like literature is just amazing for building language, for teaching you how to imagine and process. And he, so they would sit and read to him, but they didn't realize they were also practicing their own fluency skills.
Yes.
And, you know, it took a lot off of my plate too, because that's another thing with, when you're homeschooling and you feel really overwhelmed is sometimes there's just too many tasks for too few hours in a day, but there are so many things that our kids are able to do. They're capable of
absolutely.
Doing. And it builds their confidence, you know, like when you have a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old who's just learning to read, so you know they're sounding everything out as they go.
Right.
It builds so much confidence because that baby is absolutely just enthralled with whatever they're saying. Like, you're talking to me, I'll just stare at you. And that builds their confidence and it builds their sibling relationship to be able to, you know, they're basically working together on something without really kind of making it a formal thing.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's a very good point. I think oftentimes we try to segment our homeschools like the public school so that our kids can learn, but how much more important, you know, putting in all those different aspects that you were doing just by allowing the kids to work together and empowering them for their own education, but also that the education of a sibling. You don't want to steal that from them. And I think it's good to think of it in that perspective, is we are taking away by not allowing those opportunities to happen.
Right.
So good. Yeah. And to have a less judgmental sibling to to do that with too is important.
The sibling who doesn't ask you to speed it up when you're sounding out that
right, exactly.
No, very helpful. Yeah.
So one of the things you said you wanted to talk about is the process of figuring things out.
Yeah.
As a parent and a home educator.
Right. So I think, like I was saying, like nobody starts out like knowing what they're doing. Even I have a background in education. I've grown up around schools. My mom was a career teacher as well. So I grew up, you know, in her classroom and helping out. And I knew about working with kids. I knew about education, and it's still been a process with every single one of my kids to figure out what they needed, what worked for them. I think that's part of why, once I got over that initial overwhelming feeling when AJ was born, I just kind of changed in my brain how I thought about it. Wait, this is just another kid. They're all a puzzle, and you kind of have to figure out what pieces go together for them to make school or whatever you're teaching them work for them.
Exactly.
And I think it's just a process of learning and teasing out what's going to work for each child as you go. And it's fine that you don't know everything to start with. Nobody does. But I also think it builds a relationship with your child to be figuring out what works for them.
Yes, so true.
We know that like with babies, they bond based on our meeting their needs. That doesn't go away as your children get older, you know, as you continue to find things that work for them and identify areas of struggle for them and work with them on like, okay, is this working for you? Like having those conversations, is this working for you? And teasing out, okay, if it's not working, what is the part that's not working? I know with my kiddos who struggle with dyslexia, I remember the like kind of aha moment when I realized like, wait, I can tease out the different skills. So the child that was having trouble with answering comprehension questions. Okay, so where are we having the issue? Are we having the issue with the actual like reading part of it? Are we having the issue with understanding what we're reading? Like is it taking us too long to read so we forget the actual sentence at large? Or are you having trouble with the actual comprehension questions? Or is it actually the writing part that's the problem? So my kiddos, I have a couple who struggle with dyslexia and dysgraphia. And so they were actually doing well on the reading part of it. But that writing, it was killing them. They could not get it. And by the time they get to like the third word into the sentence, they'd have forgotten their thought. And so I just figured out, like so frustrating for them. So I just figured out if we just did those questions orally, they would get the entire rest of the point of that lesson. They could read it. They could tell me what happened in it. They could answer my questions. It was just the writing. So I pulled writing out and we used that as a separate skill that they worked on. Now those kiddos do not have an issue with that anymore. We were able, once they got that writing skill down, to put those skills together and they did fine.
Yeah.
But I feel like it built our relationship more, that trust between us, that they knew like I was in it with them. Like I was pulling for them and I was praying for them. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have an expectation that they would just figure it out on their own. They knew I was like in the trenches with them, you know, really figuring out what the problem was and trying to solve it with them.
You took the step beyond this is the curriculum's fault that you're not learning, or your fault that the, you know, this perfect curriculum that says they can teach any child is working. It's, you know, where exactly, let's be detectives together, is the, you know, something awry that we can try to fix with, you know, as a team. And it's really that coaching you're talking about, you know, that coming alongside, and as our kids get older, how much more important that is, because, I mean, it's a skill that they need to learn, but we're kind of in that with them, kind of teaching them that process, in addition to teaching them how to solve that problem specifically for what they're struggling in. And what a great life lesson, you know, and just how to tackle obstacles, basically, at the level that they're facing them.
Right. And I think in the grander scheme of things, just realizing that talking out those issues can be really helpful for finding a solution to it, that you don't have to fix every problem on your own, that there are resources available. And sometimes that's your parents. Sometimes that's a sibling. Sometimes that's your friend. Sometimes there's an organization that helps, you know?
Right.
And like recognizing that you're not stuck with figuring it out all by yourself. You know, I think it's important to teach them that. And it, you know, it's got the benefit of definitely building your relationship, but also just that it's that life lesson of understanding that there are other things out there and other people out there that can help us get through problems.
Absolutely. Yes. And it's not, you know, just, we live in that mentality. If it can't be fixed quickly, then it just can't be fixed. And then we toss it and we move on to something new. And teaching our kids how to be persistent I know Jenny and I were talking about this before the show started, just that some things take a long, long time to learn and perfect. And if we don't teach that persistence, if we don't teach that long haul mentality, we lose out on so much in our lives, and our kids do too. But it's something that our kids aren't being taught, you know, through regular media, you know, everything's instant, you don't see the hard work behind what somebody did to get to where they're at. And that's why that's one of the reasons I love biographies, is because you hear the full story, you hear where people started and the things that they went through, just to get to you know, the good stuff that you hear about at the, you know, in certain areas of their life and why they're notable to be remembered. But a lot of times we miss out on what formed that person. And our kids are going through that formation period. We are going through that formation period. And if we give up, we don't have that story to tell.
Right. Yeah. You miss out on so much when you don't continue through and make it to where you actually understand it when you give up before that. There's just a lot lost in that. So,
But there are times too when we need to switch gears.
Yes.
And
that is true.
So I definitely want you to approach that as well, because that's like banging our head against the wall, you know, and saying I'm doing it over and over and over again and nothing changes.
Exactly.
And that's not where you know, that's not persistence.
Right.
So,
and
I
think that kind of realizing that our kids are puzzles kind of is where you can figure out that you need to switch gears. When you're realizing you're watching your kid with a curriculum and you see, hold on, maybe the curriculum is just legitimately not working. Like for whatever reason, it is not a good fit for this child. And I've tried tweaking this little piece. I've tried teasing stuff out.
Absolutely.
Then, like, it's okay to just get rid of that curriculum. Like I used to feel bad. Like I shouldn't just, you know, we spent money on this curriculum. I'm invested in this curriculum.
So painful. And
exactly. But at the end of the day, it's so much more painful for everyone to keep
Like,
jam that in when it is just not a good fit. And for us, we've had some really big changes where I've seen things work really well for my kids, just in terms of what they needed.
That's awesome.
With AJ in particular, we've changed a lot. He was a child who started with primarily sign language was his language. That's what he did. He had a really extensive signing vocabulary by the time he was three.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, he's just going to be a signer. That's what we're going to do.
Right.
But he also really liked to hear things, which was a really interesting combination. Like he wanted those hearing aids, like immediately when he woke up in the morning, he wanted them on. And he had a progressive hearing loss. So by the time he was three, he had lost all measurable hearing in one ear. And we made the decision as a family to get cochlear implants for him, just to see if that would be, we wanted him to have that as an option if he wanted it, but we still were continuing with the sign language. And he did really well with that the first year. And then when he got his second implant, he just stopped signing completely.
Really?
He switched to spoken language and kind of ran with it. And I kept trying to put those signs back in because I felt like maybe he'll still need them at some point. You know, we'll keep just trying to use them. And, you know, several months in, I came to the realization, like, it's his hearing and he gets to decide what works for him on access. And if that's not what he wants anymore, I don't have a, you know, like, it's not going to be helpful to keep trying to jam that in and be like, no, we're still going to do this all the time.
Right.
That's not what he wanted at that point. We needed to switch gears and do what worked for him. And for us, it was a big adjustment because we had kind of oriented everything towards doing signing. And then we kind of had to, orient. And we didn't, it wasn't a quick, because when you are kind of used to signing.
Oh, I'm sure. You're probably just doing it, you know, without thinking about it.
Exactly. But then you kind of just realize, like, he doesn't want that. So we do still sign here and there. We're not really we don't fit in any sort of really great box, which is okay. It doesn't matter because it works for him. It's what works for him.
Exactly.
And so, but I've noticed that with other, I mean, obviously that's the biggest one in our lives. That was such a dramatic change for him.
That is huge. Yes.
that it really sticks out in my mind, but there have been plenty. I remember a particular spelling curriculum that we had, and I thought it was amazing. I researched
Isn't that the way it usually goes? Yes.
And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. It's got, you know, it does have the rules. It's got this and that. And then it worked beautifully with my first child. I was like, all right, awesome. And my second child was like, it was not flying for him.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, well, maybe we'll try it on the third. No. not a good fit for him either. And it just kind of got to the point that I said, okay, this one just needs to go to the side.
Right.
If somebody, it's there. If I've learned, I don't get rid of them anymore.
Yes.
I have had to rebuy some. but in general, I just, if it's not working for that child and you can't tweak it to get to a point that it does work, it's fine to just set it aside and say, okay, we're not doing that now, or we're not doing that at all.
Right.
If it doesn't work. Because at the end of the day, it's about finding out what works for that child and their learning, you know, their learning style, and just how to get that information into them the best. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I love that. Don't give away or sell anything. It's amazing. I found out though, when I moved, I kind of had to sometimes. And I know as a military family, you probably have to declutter a bit too. And it's probably a hard choice. What goes, what stays. But yeah. And having so many kids, I promise it's very freeing when they're all done that you can finally get rid of stuff.
It's coming very quickly.
Yes. But yeah, no, those are some really great points that you made about, you know, just that need to shift. These things can be tweaked, but there's certain things that when a curriculum is built, you know, the person who designed it, and really is a design, and we often don't think so deeply into, yeah, somebody just put some things on paper, you know, because some curriculum is actually made that way, you know, like we go to teachers, but faith teachers, and it's just a mishmash of everything. But when curriculum is designed, that designer has a specific methodology and viewpoint, you know, a typical child that they're reaching. And if it's too far out of the bounds for how you're teaching, how your child receives information, it can tax you so much trying to make those changes versus just setting it aside and buying something new.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you do learn through the process though, don't you?
Oh, you absolutely do. And I remember early on just feeling like I was going to plan and do everything myself. Cause I had that degree, and I thought, I do not need to buy a curriculum. I'll just design my own curriculum. And that lasted for roughly 2 months before I realized I'd really enjoy seeing my children, you know, like spending time with them and not just spending all day, you know, trying to in between everything, writing out a curriculum.
Yes.
So when you get to the point that your curriculum is just that far off that you feel like you're basically having to rewrite it, I would say that's a really good clue that it's probably time to find something different.
Exactly. Yes. And that can cause a lot of overwhelm. When you feel like you need to be doing everything.
Yes.
And there's just too many plates we have spinning. You've got to let other people or other, you know, businesses or somebody take some of those things away from you. And sometimes it's the curriculum, sometimes it's a therapist. I know, you know, a variety of different things, and, or, you know, somebody maybe that just comes into your home and helps out for various tasks. It may be schooling. It may just be taking care of your house so you can spend more time. You know, it's a give and take, and there's a balance that you have to strike in how much can I do? So we had talked previously in our discussion before we popped on to the recorded interview about your son AJ needing a lot of therapy. How did all of that mix in with, because you were already homeschooling, how did you balance all of that out?
I remember being so overwhelmed at first. I remember my first thought when I found out that he was hard of hearing was, oh my goodness. Cause I have 5 kids total. My oldest at that point was in 4th grade, and they went down, they're about 2 years apart. So they were down the line, and how am I going to do? Because I understood from an educational standpoint, how important it was to get early intervention services of some variety so that we could get him started and on the right road to being able to learn the skills that he needed.
Right.
And then he wasn't just identified as having a hearing loss, he also had some other issues going on. And so we had 4 days a week of therapy.
Wow.
When he was little. And I remember just being so overwhelmed at first, like, I cannot do this. Like, it was paralyzing because there was just so much to do.
Right.
And no one gave me extra hours in a day. It wasn't like, you know, somebody said, oh, here, you're busy, have a couple extra.
Right.
and then we still had to work on, you know, I still had to cook and all those normal household things that still had to happen. And so there were a few things that I did that were really helpful. One of the things that I did was I love literacy for my kids. I love the idea of doing read alouds. And I did a lot of them when I had a lot of small kids. But when he started doing therapy 4 days a week, I was driving to all of those things, which took a good chunk out of our day to drive there, be at therapy, and then come back. Mm-hmm. And so I discovered audiobooks.
They
were a lifesaver for making sure my kids were still getting those like good literacy goals met, like that we were still reading a lot, but we were just listening in the car. And then I would prioritize like what actually had to be done in a day. Like I did need to feed the children every day.
Right.
You know, what were for school, what were the most important tasks that I felt like were really, you know, at that point they were very small. So what were the really foundational things? And they were our language arts. So mostly like reading, in particular, those reading skills and math, because I felt like everything else we could do, you know, like history, we could watch videos about history, like we could listen to books. Exactly. There were plenty of other things we could do, but those math and those reading skills, they needed me to sit down with them and do. Yes. So that those were a priority for me. And then we added the other stuff in different ways that was kind of easier, that took some of the burden off of me. Like I might have the fourth grader read to the younger kids their history, which reinforced those, you know, reading skills for him.
Exactly.
But also the other kids could still hear the lesson.
Yes.
And we did, I'm trying to think what else we did. We did a lot of really fun stuff.
Creative things, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of have to. So I would have my kids bring, I would, in the morning before we went to therapy, I would sit and I would go over the things that I knew that they needed me to go over with them, like their math or whatever.
Yeah.
And I would have them, because they'd be in the waiting room. And, you know, that's not fun. That's not fun for kids. So
yes.
I would have them work on those tasks once, you know, the practice for math or whatever. So they were able to use that time to actually get the things done that they would have just been doing it on. They would have had to do that independently at home anyway.
Right.
And so then the time that I had with them was time to actually give instruction instead of waiting for them to do all of those other tasks.
Exactly.
And then I think the biggest thing that was helpful for me when I, and still, because everybody has days where they're overwhelmed with things. So when I look, because right now between my five kids, I've got 40 subjects I'm teaching.
That's just overwhelming just saying that.
So when I think about it too hard, I get a little overwhelmed by it.
I was going to say, I never in my career of homeschooling broke that down. Probably if it was a good thing.
We're doing portfolio soon here, which is why it's stuck in my head.
Yes.
But the thing that I've learned is just to pick one thing, like one small thing, and do it. Just do one small thing. And it kind of triggers that like motivation in you. Okay, I've got one thing done. Check it off the list. Write it down. That's another thing, as I like to, even if I did not have it on a list before, I like to write it down and check it off because it makes me feel better.
Oh yeah. You can actually visually see everything you get done.
Exactly. There's something so important about having just doing one thing and starting it.
Yeah.
And it makes the other tasks easier because then it's not the whole list looking at you. You've got the one thing.
So true.
To check off. I've got that done. And the reality is we do have a lot to do. As homeschooling parents, that's how it is. There's a lot to do. There's, you know, we live in our homes. We're home all day. So our houses look like we're home all day. As
yeah,
opposed
they
to,
do. Yeah. Know,
they require more maintenance because of that. And so I think just that prioritization is key. Like that picking,
yes,
like, what are your,
so true,
what are your big things that need to really be done every day? And then having reasonable expectations. I've had to learn to cut down my list because I'm one of those people who has a list a mile long, which there is no way possible I could get through in a month, but right, I've got it there. And I had to finally start labeling them. Like I write, you know, if it's really important, it gets written in red. Like this one needs to be done today.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Very visual. So,
yes,
you know, if it could be done sometime this week or whatever, then it'll be a different color. If it's right, just something I would like to have done, but it's not top of the list of priorities, then, you know, that gets its own color too. But something about right, that prioritizing so that the important things fit in.
Yeah.
And then you can fit in whatever else you can fit beyond those priorities, but we're never going to get done with everything we feel like we need to do in a day. So kind of breaking down those lists into what is actually manageable. Like we have,
yes,
like almost budgeting our time in the same way we budget money.
That's a good way to put it.
We don't have an infinite resources in either of those. So we need,
yes,
to kind of take what we actually have and break it down into what we actually are capable of doing with that time that we have.
Yeah. Yeah. And that allows us to release it. You know, we have to have grace with ourselves. And when the day comes to an end, you just have to say, I got done what needed to be done. And tomorrow's a new day. And that's okay. But we do have to prioritize, and it's so important because, I mean, our natural tendency is to do those things that we want to do versus that we have to do. And also, again, we're teaching our kids a really good skill by showing them we do what's most important. It may not be what's most comfortable, what we most like, but it's what's at the top of the list. And when we prioritize our lives in the correct manner, what needs to be done always gets done. And
exactly. And
God always allows time for the rest and for, you know, all those other things if we prioritize correctly. It's amazing how that all falls into place.
Right.
Yeah.
And then just that there is so much grace for every day that we're not expected to be perfect. We don't need to
right,
be. We need to like release ourselves from that idea that we're ever even going to attain that here. That's
yes,
not going to happen. And
absolutely,
that's okay. That's okay that there is so much grace. Like our kids are not going to have horrible lives because we didn't teach them this one thing this one
right,
day, right?
Yes.
Like
uh-huh,
that they will be okay. Our kids are going to be okay. And that we don't have to hold all the weight of everything that they need every day, you know,
yes,
that we just step by step through it. And it's
yep,
really that being faithful to that regular, diligent education. That's the important thing. We're teaching them how to think and how to find out information and
right,
these little life skills that we teach them in the midst of teaching the curriculum are the
yeah,
things that are actually going to carry them.
They are.
They're really going to learn.
So true. Yes. You know, we get those foundational blocks down but again, it's the process of how we do it more so than the check boxes of yes, we got that lesson done, and now my child has a good foundation. And so all life is going to go swimmingly. And it just doesn't.
Exactly.
But that's unfortunately a great lie that we want to believe so badly because it just is so much easier than saying, well, we'll do everything that we know we need to do, that's right to do. And it may all just fall apart, even so. And but God is in control and he is good. And, you know, that I think that's the underlying thing, that that trust and that faith, where that has to come in, because we just do what we know we need to do and we leave the rest to him.
Exactly. And there's always going to be things that we don't know, that we can't account for, or we didn't see coming.
Yes.
And I think there's such value in learning to look to the Lord, to learning to trust him and his sovereignty, especially with our kids. Because I feel like as a parent, like that's such a hard thing, because we want to just do it right because we want such good things for them.
Yeah.
But as much as we want that, the Lord wants it more. The Lord wants good things for them more. And what he can see is bigger than what we can see.
So true. Yeah.
And that ability to stop and realize, like, I'm not God in this situation. I'm not going to know everything. I'm not going to do it perfectly.
Right.
Like, only he could do that, but we can trust him with that. And we can trust him with the outcome for our kids, that, that he will take our efforts and use them for his glory and for our benefit and their benefit.
Yes. Yeah. So true. So we have a question from one of our viewers. If you do not know this, if you're not on our mailing list, if you get our emails every week, we announce the show on Monday night before we record it on Tuesday, and we allow you the ability to submit questions ahead of time. And also that will give you a reminder that the show is happening, because I know your lives are crazy and sometimes you're like, I just need a quick email to tell me, oh, it's about to start. And that makes it easier. So get on our email list. You can go to our website at spedhomeschool.com and click that you want to be on our newsletter, and then I'll subscribe you. But we had one of our subscribers write, Jacqueline B. said, I need best tips on getting over the overwhelm. So what do you have to share, Jenny?
I think first remembering that we are not responsible for all of it. Like, we have a responsibility to teach our kids and to learn and to figure out what works for them. But we are not the end all be all here.
Yes.
And so I think just starting from that point can be really helpful, because it feels like kind of some of that weight gets lifted off of our shoulders. It's not all on us.
Yes.
Our kids are going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And then I think just as you, like, again, back to that, like, figuring out what are those important things? Like, what are the things that really mean something?
Yeah.
And starting with one small one can be so helpful and kind of like relieving that sense of overwhelm, because just a small step forward is still a step forward. And sometimes that's all you need to kind of break through and move forward. I think also talking I found that we kind of bounce ideas off of each other and stuff, and to have people who can kind of be a sounding board for you and whatever, whether that's you're in therapy or whether you're talking to friends or getting godly counsel, like having somebody who can say to you, like, it's okay. You don't actually have to do all of this, or you don't have to, you know, kind of who can help you prioritize, who can help you figure out what you need to be doing, but also what lies we're telling ourselves, because we do tell ourselves lies, like not intentionally.
So yes.
But like, oh, I should be perfect. I should be good at this. I should know how to do that. I should have done more. And I know the people who have spoken truth to me and said, okay, so you're kind of expecting yourself to be God, basically, at this point. You're not in the sense of like actually being God, but in the sense of like you're expecting characteristics of God in yourself. You're expecting yourself to be perfect. You're expecting yourself to know everything.
Yeah,
and those are things. Those are lies, and they're defeating because they're lies. That's the goal of lies, is to be defeating to us.
Right.
So just having that sounding board can be really helpful too, just to help you put things in proper perspective, I feel like.
Yeah. It's, you know, when you're in that pit, that overwhelm is like covering you. And sometimes it just gets so weighted that we need that hand of somebody else that is, you know, just willing to grab it and say, I'm just here with you, you know, like you were talking about earlier with your kids. And this is my perspective from up here versus your perspective down there. And if we're willing to listen and learn, how freeing and, that can be.
And I think too, and I should have said this first because it is actually the bigger one. praying is so big for me, for fighting that overwhelm, for remembering who I am and who he is, and just being able to figure out what is the priority. I mean, that's you know, listening through prayer, you know, to figure out what I should be doing, like what is actually the priority here. And that can also be really helpful for kind of bringing calm too, I think, in that peace that you can get through prayer, on top of being able to actually logistically figure out what needs to be done.
Right. Yes. It kind of just, God has that ability to break in when we open ourselves up to his will versus just ours, and just kind of leave it as, okay, your will be done. What does that look like? Instead of me doing this hamster wheel thing of my will, my will, my will, and eventually everything just has to come about. It just doesn't work that way. And there's so much more peace and purposeful steps when we proceed. I'm using a lot of peas. everything just with being in his presence and saying, okay, let's just not allow all these weights to, you know, that scripture, you know, come to me, all you are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. I mean, I think that's been a theme this month, whether we set that as our theme or not. but God doesn't want us to be overwhelmed. He just says, learn from me. I mean, and I loved when I captured that in that verse, was that he takes the yoke, but it isn't just of him taking the weight. It's about our need to learn through the process. It is a learning thing. And when we put ourselves into that mode where we're just learning alongside God, it's not up to us. We're just in process, like our kids are in process. And that just... it helps so much, so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We've just got 10 minutes to talk. I want you to talk a little bit about Hands and Voices and just what you do with the military part of that support group. But I'd also like you to talk before that. You said you have a child who had cancer, and that process had to be extremely overwhelming for your family. And and in the process of, you know, homeschooling and everything else, would you talk just a little bit about that and that process?
Absolutely. So I have my middle kiddo was treated for leukemia. He is actually ringing the bell this week. So we are very excited that he's done after 3.5 years of treatment. We had actually just moved to where we are now. And within a month of that, he was diagnosed with cancer. And so it was, and then we were also not far out from my youngest son's second cochlear implant surgery. So we were kind of handling multiple medical issues simultaneously. And it was very overwhelming, I think, for everyone initially. Just, you know, honestly, the fear that comes when your child is diagnosed with cancer, but also just how much needed to be done, because we were still very much in doing a lot of therapy for my younger son. And then with my middle kiddo, he needed, obviously he was in the hospital every week for chemotherapy at the beginning, just because that's how it works.
Right.
And I, one of the things that we really had to cut back on, like all the extras that we would do. I'm a big, like, let's go to the library programs. Let's go on a field trip. Let's do this fun project that takes over my whole house. And, you know,
exactly.
Let's do it. And there's five of them. Furniture. So like everybody gets a new project. And, we kind of at that point had to really pull back and say, okay, what are we actually able to do? And it wound up looking a lot different. Things like I switched us onto an online curriculum because it graded papers, because it was just something that I could not deal with at that point. I had too many other things that actually needed my direct attention. So something that could say A, B, C, D, yes, you're right. Awesome. Perfect. You will do that for a while. But I also think like so much of the process was just learning the lessons that God had for us in it, like learning to trust him, that was where I really learned about God's sovereignty and his care for my children being so much greater than my own. I love my kids immensely. I love them as their parent, but I actually like, I just genuinely like really like them too. They're really fun kids.
Yeah.
And I'm a person who's either all or nothing. So like homeschooling, I'm all in. And realizing like that the Lord is so much more in for my kids than I am.
Oh, like, that's good.
And he is trustworthy. And I think that transferred so much to me to our homeschooling journey, that as much as I want the best for them with this, and I want to do all the right things for them and make it work, he's the only one who can actually do perfection. Like,
right.
And he's the one who is trustworthy with their lives, with their futures. And that it kind of just, it takes some pressure off of the homeschooling and off of feeling, off of the overwhelm, really, of feeling like so much was just on me to make sure I had all the right, whatever it was.
Absolutely.
That I don't need to do that. I just need to be faithful and taking the next step. And that's what I always say, like, in getting rid of that overwhelm, the biggest thing is the next step. But that's really what being faithful is. It's taking the next step in faith.
It is.
So often we don't know what's coming. We don't know what the future is going to look like.
Yeah.
But we're not responsible for that.
Yeah.
We're responsible for taking the next step in faith. And for those of us who are homeschooling, that next step is doing what that child needs at that moment. And that,
absolutely,
that plays into, you know, whether you need to make a decision to change what you're doing, or you need to stick with it through, you know, and just kind of work through this thing that's hard to do, but that you can still do.
Yes.
The next step is the most important thing. And I think that's really what I've learned, because that's when you're looking at a cancer diagnosis, because he was very, very sick at the beginning. Wow. That's all you get. That's all of us really get, right? Yep. Like at the end of the day, all any of us get is this next step that we're taking right now.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because when I was fighting my cancer battle, the words on my mirror were fight forward, because it is that step that is so hard just to move the next step. And it does translate very well to some of our days. You know, they feel like such a battle. And fight forward for yourself, fight forward for your children. That it's worth it. It's worth every struggle and every battle. Yeah. So
absolutely
true.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate you, doing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell us about Hands and Voices.
So I love Hands and Voices. They are a phenomenal parent-led organization. We're nationwide. We have different chapters for each state.
Yeah.
And we support families of deaf and hard of hearing kids. And each state kind of does it a little bit differently. But the idea is that when you have a child who is deaf or hard of hearing, you get a lot of input.
I'm sure you do.
But, and you hear from a lot of professionals, and
right.
It's really helpful to to walk with people who've walked down that path before, who kind of know what to look out for, what to, you know, because there's a really diverse range of ways that you can work with kids who are deaf and hard of hearing. I have friends whose children use only ASL, no amplification of any kind, and who do beautifully with that. And I have friends whose kids are completely spoken language, have never done ASL in their lives, and they do well with that. And so it's about kind of knowing what that range is so that you can pick what works for your child. And that's the reason I love Hands and Voices, is because they offer non-biased support. So it's not slanted. I mean, everyone obviously has their own opinion, but it's, as an organization, they try so hard to make sure that parents are given all the options, have information on all the options, so they can pick what works best for their child.
That's awesome.
And I'm really fortunate. I get to help co-lead their military project, which I founded with one of my friends who was a former teacher of the deaf back when AJ was a baby, actually. And so we support military families. We don't do a lot of like the local things. The local things, we kind of say, go talk to your state chapter and learn about what's happening locally with you. We do more of the things like, what do you need to do to get your child's hearing aids covered through our military insurance or cochlear implants? Does that work?
Many unique things, right?
Yeah. Or like linking up parents with like, okay, who's been at Fort Bliss and knows what's available there?
Kind of
linking up parents, because our kids have, generally speaking, a 2 to 3 month lag in services every time we move. And so we want to try to close that gap so they can get their services quickly. So, you really just enjoy supporting parents, getting to talk with them. And, we have a face group. It's, if you look up Hands and Voices, and it's Military Family Support is the group.
Okay.
And it is just for, parents of deaf and hard of hearing kids. We don't typically have professionals in there. You want it to be a safe place.
Yeah, that's what we do with our Facebook group too. They have to answer that they're a parent. And support is so much different than resource sharing. And not a lot of people understand that. But when you start sharing resources, nobody shares anymore. They feel like their trust has been broken. And so to keep those separate. So I'm so happy to hear that you've provide that for parents and that support, because it is so crucial when we don't know what we're doing and we need that reassurance that it's going to be okay. And there's people that have walked this road before you. So thank you for doing what you do with them. And I also want to thank Carter Hears. They are a business that works with homeschooling parents to help them with students who have hearing issues. They are sponsoring this broadcast today. And so you can visit carterhears.com as well. And then Hands and Voices, it's handsandvoices.org that Jenny is associated with. So, well, thank you so much, Jenny. This has been an amazing conversation. Definitely feeling less overwhelmed. I got on today and I'm like, I'm not even ready. So these were words I needed to hear. And even though it isn't related to homeschooling, it's related to just all the changes going on with SPED Homeschool, which we have some exciting things going on. So you want to visit our website. Some big changes have already started to take place. We have new things on our freebies page and some other things coming your way in our newsletters, some deals and other things. So be on lookout for that. And then next week, we start our new monthly topic. We're going to be talking about twice exceptional children, which those are those kids that are gifted with a glitch. I know I have three of them. And that takes a unique approach. And so we're going to start out talking about student stress management, because a lot of these kids have very perfectionist mindsets, because they can do something very well and they think across the board they can do everything well. And then they get very depressed and defeated. So we're going to talk about that stress that really is the very beginning of all of that and how to help your student with that. So I'm super excited to dive into that topic. But we've had a great month. If you haven't listened to all the broadcasts, go back, go to the podcasts. They're just started coming out actually this week. And or we'll watch on the YouTube channel some of our past broadcasts. Thank you again, Jenny. This has been an amazing conversation. Thank you for being willing to be on the show and share your wisdom and expertise. It's been a pleasure. Just
thank you having so much for having
this conversation with you. Absolutely. And so thank you all for joining us. And we'll see you again next week. Same time, same place here. Until then, God bless and have a great week. Bye, everybody. I want to take just a second to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on this podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you'll find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
This has been Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer.
Everyone wants to change the world. Capital Ministries is doing just that, one heart at a time, by creating disciples of Jesus Christ among political leaders in the U.S. and foreign nations. For more than 25 years, founder Ralph Drollinger has written Bible studies specifically for public servants. Study along with us and learn what the Bible says about capitalism, communism, abortion, same-sex marriage, and other contemporary issues. Subscribe and follow us at lifeaudio.com or search Capital Ministries on your favorite podcast platform.